convention in May.
So I think it's really important for Native people to be running for every level of office. It's important for people to be voting and supporting other Native candidates.
Like Alfred, Renee Bellinger, a citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Ojibwe and owner of Creative Native Beadwork, is passionate about supporting Native voices.
It's just been super important, as we've seen all of the craziness that's happening in our world right now. It's been more important than ever to get involved. It's, of course, important for Native people because, again, we had been left out of the conversation for so long.
I think the first thing that Native folks, young Native folks, can do to feel proactive is to remember that you have a place in this process, and it is older than the government that surrounds us.
To register to vote and to find your polling place ahead of the November 3rd election, visit sos.mn.gov. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Deanna Standing Cloud.
Next, Chaz Wagner hears about concerns that Native communities have about a pipeline proposed near sacred pipestone quarries.
For thousands of years, Indigenous people have come to what is now known as Pipestone National Monument to quarry redstone, known as catlinite, and used for making their ceremonial pipes. Pascal Carillel is the president for the Keepers of the Sacred Tradition of Pipe Makers and member of the Cherokee Nation.
Pipes are one of the tools used by Natives to connect to the spirits, send their prayers, and be used for various ceremonies.
The Magellan Pipeline Company is seeking permission to reroute approximately 3/4 of a mile just north of Pipestone National Monument. But tribal governments and Indigenous organizations say moving the pipeline outside the monument does not eliminate the threat.
Definitely a sacred location. There's a lot of spiritual and cultural significance associated with the Pipestone area.
Cheyenne St. John is the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer and tribal member for the Lower Sioux.
We share that geographic location, and it's not entirely understood how profound those risks can impact the community.
Magellan considered permanently shutting down the pipeline. However, the United States Environmental Protection Agency recently mandated that 2 special grades of gasoline that are not currently accessible in Minnesota be made available. If the pipeline is not restored to service, it would cause fuel shortages and increase gasoline prices in the region.
It really fortifies the responsibility that we have as cultural stewards to that landscape in particular. So being so close in proximity to it really allows us to keep a closer eye on the happenings and the potential impacts to Pipestone.
The Minnesota Public Utilities Commission has required an additional cultural and archaeological review, including consultation with tribal historic preservation offices. For Minnesota Native News, I'm Chaz Wagner.
That's all for this week's episode. Join us next time for more voices and stories. Minnesota Native News is produced by AMPERS, Minnesota's community radio stations, made possible by funding from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the citizens of Minnesota.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
I'm doing urban music. I wanted my cultures to be represented, and so I'm like, okay, I love reggaeton music, dancehall. I love Caribbean music. I was afraid for a while. Like, I was scared. I don't know why. You know, there's something really vulnerable about singing. Rapping, too, but especially singing. Especially singing and being a rapper. There was a stigma around it.
Bonjour, hello. Welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Cole Primo. Miigwech for joining us today. Native Lights is a podcast and radio show, but oh my goodness, it's much more than that. At its core, it's a place for Native folks to tell their stories. Each and every week, we have captivating conversations with great guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds. We're talking musicians, artists, community leaders, educators, language warriors, you name it. They have a wonderful mix of passions, and we talk to them about their gifts and how they share the gifts with their community. And it centers around the big point of purpose in our lives, which for us is, you know, amplifying Native voices. It's one of our big ones. Mm-hmm. So.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, let's go. How are you doing, Leah?
I am doing well. Just hanging in there. We got some storms today up here. I'll try not to be a weather person here. I have no right to be. But yeah, it's been great. Popping around town, talking to folks as usual. But yeah, how are you?
Oh, it's muggy out there, huh? Ugh. For the people listening in the future, in the way future, it is a very extreme heat type of day with high humidity. And I'm, of course, adding to the weather discussion, but it's hard to ignore on a day like today. But, you know, otherwise, doing well, mm-hmm. trying to get as much sleep as possible, which is not that much, but it's, you know, it's okay. Not complaining.
Yeah. Well, a day like today kind of reminds me how different our weather up north can be from your weather in the cities. Because it was just like rain, rain, rain. I was wearing a jacket, and you guys are like sweating.
A jacket. Wow.
Ah, rain jacket. Oh,
okay. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. But, you know.
But, yeah, I guess we are kind of far.
Yeah. Well.
It's all right.
Let's get into it. You know, we love talking to musicians, you know.
Oh, yeah.
We got one today. Mm-hmm. We're very excited to speak with Rafael Gonzalez, a.k.a. Tufa One. He's a Midwakitan Dakota and Boricua, also known as Puerto Rican. He's a rapper, singer-songwriter, and producer who calls South Minneapolis home. In addition to his music making, he's also an educator. He teaches youth music production, songwriting, and recording through his music production program, Wave Warrior. Wave, like a wave file, you know.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a dream. Really cool program to do.
Yeah. And so we'll talk to him about all of that and more. Here he is. Bonjour, Tufa One.
Hello.
All right. Could you please start by introducing yourself and, you know, telling us where you're joining us from?
I'm a Dakyapi, Chante, Washte, Nape, Chuzapi, Magaju Chaga, Imakiapido. Hello, my relatives. My name is Tufa One, and I'm Madewakantuan Dakota and Boricua from the south side of Minneapolis, and I'm coming all the way live from Borican. I'm in Puerto Rico right now.
Awesome. Leah, do you want to just get to it then?
No. Yeah, I mean, I was just going to ask, like, what's up? What are you doing in Puerto Rico?
Well, I've been doing a lot of touring and a lot of work, protest, music. A combination of both. And this year has been incredibly busy, especially, you know, being from the Twin Cities. And then I was touring Europe doing divestment work. And I wanted to go to Puerto Rico to just immerse myself in our culture and, you know, gain some fluency and spend time with family because I have a ton of family here. And that trip got pushed back. I was initially supposed to be going in the winter time, and it got pushed back. So here I am enjoying this month-long recharge and, yeah, just immersing myself in the culture, being with family, working while I'm here, too. So it's kind of a combination of a retreat, but also, you know, getting work done and plugging away on my laptop and working on, you know, my bookings. And I have my recording studio here, so I'm also staying busy while I'm here too. So yeah.
Wonderful. Whereabouts in Puerto Rico did you say you are?
I'm in Aguada, which is on the west mm-hmm. coast. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Almost all the way west. Yeah. My family is from the mountains, and I come from a giant family that has been in these same mountains for generations and generations. And on our indigenous side, I mean, we go way, way back. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. It feels good to be on my other ancestral homelands.
Mm-hmm. Well, my family and I, we went to Puerto Rico in February, but we were staying in Old San Juan.
Okay.
And so I just follow a little bit of what's going on in Puerto Rico, and I saw they had some water issues recently.
Mm-hmm.
But that might have been more towards San Juan area.
It is in the San Juan metro area, mm-hmm. and I took a day trip out there without even knowing what was going on. Mm-hmm.
And I cruised out there, and I was getting a camera lens, and I found a really cool lens on Marketplace, and I'm like, oh, it's in San Juan, so I gotta go out there. And so I went, and I was like, you know what, let me make a little stop in old San Juan, and yeah, just go hang out and get a coffee and just walk around this old city. And I went, and when I was at the coffee shop, I was like, hey, where's the bathroom? And they're like, oh, yeah, sorry, our bathroom is out of order. We don't have any water in this whole area. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, my God, I didn't even realize. Come to find out, there's like this terrible water crisis happening. But it's mainly in the San Juan metro area. Like, I'm fine, and my family members and everybody on this side of the island, we have water, so...
Great. Thanks. And I mean, one of the questions we like to ask when we get started is, how are you and the family doing?
Everyone's doing good. I mean, my family is, they're doing well high up in the mountains. They live in Aguada. They live in the highest mountainous peaks way up there. I've been spending a lot of time, and they seem to be doing well. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's a struggle just because the economy is really tough out here, and the United States colonialism and imperial power kind of has a chokehold on the island. So for any common Boricua, you know, it's very common for it to be a bit of a struggle out here. But my family, you know, they navigate it really well, and they know how to, they're really resilient. The older members of my family come from a generation where they experienced some really, really extreme poverty, you know, and they were able to work their way out of that, buy houses and buy land. And yeah, most of them are doing pretty good right now. So it feels good to just hold space and be with them.
Great. Well, I hope you're having some good time and eating some good food and some good mafungo.
Oh my God, the food is amazing. And I've had mofongo already several times.
Could you describe mofongo for somebody who may have not had it?
Mofongo is a traditional Puerto Rican dish, and it comes in different forms in different countries, but for us, it's a main dish, and it is stuffed mashed plantain dish. You pick your protein. You know, a lot of people will put like a chicken over it, or seafood, you know, shrimp or pork or whatever. The meat is typically made in like a caldo or a broth of some sort. It's almost like a gravy that's just, the mofongo is just smothered in it. It's incredibly good.
Maybe I shouldn't have asked that when I'm a bit hungry.
Uh-oh, triggered some cravings here.
There you go.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Rafael Gonzalez, known as 2-for-1, a Dakota and Boricua hip-hop artist, producer, and music educator from South Minneapolis.
Well, you know, let's dive into it. Can you talk to us about your music? Let's start out with 2-for-1. What does that mean for the music you create, and what's the meaning behind the name there?
Yeah, totally. So 2-for-1 really means like 2-for-1. And I'm coming from a mixed heritage. You know, I'm Dakota, I'm Boricua. And so that's kind of where that comes from. It also represents the Twin Cities, because I'm a Twin Cities person from the south side of Minneapolis. So there's that 2-for-1. But it also just means more than one. We're not linear beings. We all come from so many different intersections, cultures. As Native people, as Latinx people, as whoever we are, we're not a monolith, you know? There's so many levels and layers to who we are, and that is also reflected in the music. And so the music, I don't really take on one genre, although hip-hop has always been like the foundation of it, because that's where I come from, doing hip-hop music for so long. But I also do reggaeton and dancehall and R&B and trap soul and a lot of different genres. And I'm also a vocalist and a producer. So it really just means more than
more than one. Let me reiterate, I'm feeling like I want to liberate, eliminate, because I don't partake in what doesn't invigorate. I can't even emulate, even begin to imitate, even begin to mimic that lifestyle I obliterate. Not in my bloodline, I don't assimilate. So why indigenous people, we still innovate, keeping it 100. We painting the globe vivid and giving the world a little taste. What looks so colorful, what feels so wonderful, I hate you. And it's so, so plentiful, I can feel every interval, it's true. What looks so colorful, what feels so.
You do have a wide range of inspirations, it seems like. In one song, you're, you know, rapping, in another, you're singing, mixing it up too. Could you talk about where your inspiration comes from? What sparked that interest in music for you?
I started getting into music. I've always had an interest since I was a little kid. And I would watch the music videos on MTV. And I would be glued to the screen, and I'm like, oh my God, I love Eazy-E, and I love Whitney Houston, and I love all these different amazing artists from like the golden era. I always wanted to get into music however I could, because I had this curiosity. And so when I was in elementary, when I was in fourth grade, I played the trumpet and the clarinet. I was also in choir. I sang in choir. And so a part of my music background is formal. You know, I had gotten some classical training early in life, but I wanted to go beyond that. And I always had this interest and pull towards hip hop music and how the production was made. You know, I would listen to Tupac and I'm like, how did they get the beats? How did they do that? You know, how did they get their vocals on the beats? How did they get the sounds in there? Where do these drum sounds come from? I don't get it. I don't understand it, but I'm fascinated as a little kid. In high school, that kind of pulled me into this like lifelong journey and exploration. Well, I don't want to say exploration, but like this lifelong investigation of music and especially hip hop. And then I started learning. I had my mentors in Minneapolis. There is a huge scene of beat makers in Minneapolis that kind of took me under their wing, like members of like Fam Feud and Big Quarters, just different producers who were already doing it, artists that already paved the way for Minneapolis hip hop and already kind of built an infrastructure around it, pulled me in and took me under their wing and showed me how to do it. For me, that was in the earlier phases. Hip hop was it. I wanted to write like Nas and the Wu-Tang Clan, Mos Def, and all these amazing artists. Yeah, so it was very much lyricism driven in the beginning, especially. It was all about bars. It was going to open mics and freestyling and all of that. And then eventually, as I continued to progress and grow, you know, I wanted to incorporate the singing in there. And then, like, I would say about 2019 during COVID, I started getting into the melodic rap and sort of blending melody into it. And then in 2022, when I released my project, Until the Sun Comes Up, I started doing songs where I was, you know, I'm full on singing. I wanted my cultures to be represented, right? I'm doing urban music. I wanted my cultures to be represented. And so I'm like, okay, I love reggaeton music. You know, I love dancehall. I love Caribbean music. Why not do it? And I was like, you know what? I was afraid for a while. Like, I was scared. I don't know why. You know, there's something really vulnerable about singing. Rapping too. But especially singing and being a rapper, there was a stigma around it. And so my cultures are a huge inspiration. Yeah, just the singers that I grew up listening to.
2 for 1, I was listening to another podcast that you were on, and I heard you had some pretty solid inspiration from youth and Standing Rock.
Yeah.
Some 10 years ago or so. Well, I guess it's been 10 years since the conflict over at Standing Rock started. It was progressing over the summer. Can you speak to that?
I went out and fought the pipeline and as a Dakota person, I felt a calling. You know, there was a spiritual calling for us to come in and protect the water. And so we did. And I just so happened to fit in with a group of water protectors who were coincidentally also mostly all rappers and singers. After we got pushed off the land and we lost that fight, we were like, why don't we just tour and start touring? And that's what kind of pulled me into the whole like world of touring as an artist, you know, because I had been local, very local up until then. Started really getting into ceremony songs and traditional songs. The people that I roll with, people like Natani Means and Anton X, especially Anton, I mean, he taught me how to sing like traditional Lakota, Dakota songs because he's a traditional singer and a rapper. What the Standing Rock and No Dapple movement really did was it helped me learn so much about my culture and our ways as Dakota people. And I've been able to take these principles that I've been learning and not only live by them, but really incorporate them into the music. That's a huge takeaway from that experience that I still walk with now.
A theme that I see in your music is using music to heal. One of your songs touches on depression, how you found a way through it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, whether I'm teaching or doing this for myself, because at its foundation, you know, music, I do this for my own enjoyment, right? You know, it starts off just in my studio and I'm just toying around with things and I make music and then something comes out. And I think music, especially when it comes to writing, it has a way of allowing myself, it's like journaling. You're writing your thoughts down and it allows you to process your emotions in a really healthy and creative way. And so one of the songs, and I think I know which song you're referring to, is called Wandering. And this particular song was, you know, I was speaking to my time of feeling depressed and feeling like I was lost. The music helped pull me out of this dark place, but also ceremony and family. It also speaks to me finding ceremony and what, you know, what it means to walk this way, what it means to learn what our spirituality really means and how like it was taken away from us. And I have been, as a city native, in a lot of ways, isolated from that. That song really talks about and speaks to finding ceremony again and using music, ceremony, friends and family as and art as a way to heal and lift me out of that, as well as going to see a therapist too. I mean, that helps. Might have lost my faith, might have went down, might have dipped down, maybe didn't make a sound, might have hit the bottom, maybe fell to the ground, I might have left my spirit somewhere in the clouds, somewhere in the clouds, and I don't know how. Out of sight, I don't wanna be here, cause I'm wandering. Might go to the place that'll give me some peace. I just wanna see clear. I'm wandering when I'm feeling hella low. It made me wanna lose control. Oh, cause I'm wandering. And I should probably call my soul back home. Sometimes I cruise around in my city.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Rafael Gonzalez, also known as Tufuan, a Dakota and Boricua hip-hop artist, producer, and music educator who is from Minneapolis. So you mentioned you had mentors, and then now you've kind of turned that around and now you're educating youth on music production. with your Wave Warrior program. Is this a way of, you know, giving back, of maybe something that you would have liked to have when you were younger?
Yeah, I mean, I had similar programming, right? In a very informal way, you know, my Wave Warrior was Brandon Boggison from Big Quarters, right? Who taught me how to use my MPC 2000 XL and Medium Zach and King Karnov and Fam Feud and Yo the Movement. So I did have versions of this, right? But Wave Warrior is my own version of what that is. And I feel like because I came from a place where I had mentors, even as informal as it was, just like in bedroom studios and basement studios and whatnot, I feel like I would be doing a disservice to my community if I didn't pass that on to the next generation, because I had my old heads who did the same thing too and passed that on to me. And so I find it really important to do the same thing. But also, like, I tried this program out. I founded it in December of 2024. And I had also been working with, prior to that, with a artist collective called All Season. And the founder is Anton X. And we had been already doing music programming. So I knew that I was actually pretty good at this, right? Like making a song with the youth, and then we would do a music video. Things change and shift, and I still work with All Season, but I wanted to do something on my own as well. So I started this program, and I started teaching up in Red Lake at the charter school. Essentially, the Wave Warrior program, it's a music curriculum that I designed where I travel to different indigenous communities across Turtle Island, and I teach audio production, songwriting, and recording. I bring my mobile recording studio with me, and I make full songs from start to finish with indigenous youth. Not everybody is able to do this, right? I just know that I have this talent where I can work with a group of anywhere between 1 to 15 kids, ages, I don't know, grades 14 into like college level, and like turn it into a whole experience. And by the end of the program, the outcome is a fully produced song, mixed and mastered. At this point, I've visited so many communities that I have like albums worth of songs at this point. And they're so beautiful. Like, you gotta hear it. If you go to my website, if you go to twoforone.com/youthwork, you can listen to a handful of those songs that I've created with these kids, and they are amazing. It's not only about creating the songs, right? But it's the memories and the experience, and showing these young people that, you know, music can be a pathway for them, because I've been able to travel the world using music, and I'm trying to tell them, like, hey, you know, you can do the same thing too. I'm a native person and you're a native person, and all you got to do is follow these steps. I mean, there's a lot more to it, but it's like my pride and joy right now.
What other projects are you working on?
I don't have anything like an album, right, that I'm working on, because I did release an EP at the beginning of the year called Gradient. So I'm kind of still promoting that and putting out visuals, more like social media content style mini music videos for those songs. And I did this EP in partnership with the Duluth Art Institute, and I was commissioned by the American Composers Forum to do this EP. It's called Gradient, and it is essentially the soundtrack to a Native art exhibition that was going on at the Duluth Art Institute, showcasing the works of Carl Gaboy and Wendy Savage. And their work is incredible. And I had the honor of being able to be the sonic sound of the exhibition.
Well, as we wind down our conversation together, can you talk a little bit about what motivates you to continue doing your work?
I feel good doing it. It's just so natural. Like, when I'm in the studio making music, it pulls me in. That hasn't left. I think that's the most